welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, Georgia Congressman Austin Scott joins the show to discuss the USMCA review and the potential for additional farm aid payments. But first, here are this week's headlines. Beef prices are driving higher grocery store bills. According to the latest Consumer Price Index, prices at the grocery store were up nearly 4% in April alone. Beef accounted for a majority of that rise, with a nearly 3% cost increase, followed by fruit and vegetable prices up about 2%. President Donald Trump considered signing a pair of executive orders this week to expand beef imports and grow the domestic cattle herd, with the goal of bringing down beef prices. The plan would have suspended certain beef import quotas that allow a set volume of beef to enter the U.S. at a reduced tariff rate. However, after industry criticism of the proposed plan, the White House says it is now fine-tuning the actions. USDA says this year could yield the smallest wheat crop in over 50 years. In the first look at the 2026 through 2027 crop, the Agriculture Department's new World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report projects higher prices for both corn and soybeans as demand for biofuels grows. Wheat production, on the contrary, is expected to fall more than 20%. And winter wheat fall by 25%. Severe drought has pushed nearly half of U.S. winter wheat into a poor or very poor rating. Farm country is feeling pressures from a struggling farm economy paired with rising fuel and fertilizer costs. Georgia Congressman Austin Scott says lawmakers are continuing to express the need for additional farm aid.
I do think there will be another bridge assistance payment. I know there's been some discussion about when and how big it will be. Those discussions will continue. If we are able to get a supplemental for the war in Iran, then there will be an opportunity to do the bridge assistance payments in that. There is some debate about paying some of that sooner rather than later, and whether or not we should wait until the end of the crop year to figure out actually which commodities had bigger or shorter losses before you would pay all of the money out. We will work that out in a manner that is equitable to America's producers. It will not be perfect, but it will be good. And so I'm pretty confident that as a war funding package pushes forward, that there will be some assistance for America's agriculture producers. I'm not aware of any commodity right now where the input costs are not exceeding the revenue for the American farmer.
And you mentioned some of those unknowns so far and some unknowns on the process, but there's been some numbers floated around somewhere between $15 and $20 billion. You know, what do you see within that? And, you know, how much of that do you think should be set aside for specialty crop growers?
Yeah, there will be a fair amount set aside for specialty crop growers. It will, again, and this is where I get to, we need to know, I mean, I lean on the side of we could do something now because we know what the increased cost of production is through the land grant institutions and other institutions can tell us what the additional cost per acre to grow was for the different commodities. And we could go ahead and do something, but I fall on the side of preferring to wait until the end of the year to determine what the most equitable payment manner is based on what happens throughout the crop year. Others have different opinions. Just know this, there will be honest debate over this, and we will get to what I believe will be an equitable solution among honorable people in the discussions, including the associations of the different specialty crop producers, as well as your traditional row crop producers. I don't know if it will be closer to 15 or closer to 20. We want to go ahead and get some of the money set aside so that we know that we have it at the end of the year. And as we go into the November elections, nobody knows what happens after the election cycle actually occurs. So as we do a supplemental for the war, assuming we do a supplemental for that, is the right time to go ahead and secure some funds for production agriculture, especially in traditional crops. And then we can figure out exactly how it's going to be paid out, as time progresses.
Yeah. I also want to ask you, you penned a letter to the U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer this week to use the USMCA review later this year to address unfair competition from Mexican specialty crop imports. I mean, how would you like to see that agreement that USMCA changed as we moved through that review this year.
Well, so as I represent Georgia, and if you get into Georgia, Florida, you know, our growing seasons are the same as Mexico. Mexico plays by a totally different set of rules than we have to play by in the United States of America. Everything from, you know, tractors to chemicals, especially the labor and the wage rate, that has been, I think, the most difficult thing for American producers to compete with is the different wage rates between Mexico and the United States of America. Obviously, we got some wage rates after President Trump was elected, some relief there for American producers. We still have the workers wanting to come to the United States and harvest in the U.S. So I think that the president was able to achieve some balance there with what's fair for the producer and what's fair for the people that are working. By the way, you know, I didn't realize that it was an option not to work in the fields when I was younger. I continue to talk to my family about it, and they tell me it wasn't. And so when we hear that Americans won't take these jobs, I kind of, you know, smile and laugh because when I was coming up, we took them, and we're glad to have them. So, but that aside, the wage rate has helped the American producer be competitive, more competitive, but they still are at competitive, the competitive challenges because Mexico has different standards and different rules and regulations. USMCA is an opportunity to make sure that they're not allowed to grow and harvest without the input costs that the rules and regulations that put on the American farmer force us to have and then dump into the United States at a price below what we can actually grow and harvest the crop for in the United States of America.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
The European Union is continuing to pursue deforestation regulations. I asked Georgia Congressman Austin Scott what impacts those regulations could have on his home state and the nation's forestry sector.
They should be very concerned about it. If timber is any part of your revenue or the value of your property, because it's not just if you're harvesting the timber, it's the value of your property when you go to the bank and you borrow money. It is a very serious problem for the United States of America. So the European Union, they created this rule, the European Union Deforestation Regulation. It was created for Brazil to stop the cutting down of the Brazilian rainforest. I would agree with them that the cutting down of the Brazilian rainforest is a problem with regard to the environment. And I don't have a problem with them trying to stop it. What I have a problem with is the fact that the European Union has put in rules and regulations that are designed for Brazil and stopping the reduction or the elimination of the Brazilian rainforest, and they've applied it to the United States of America. And so in my state, Georgia, we grow more trees than we cut on an annual basis. And yet they are turning around and putting in rules and regulations that, again, increase the cost of operations for everybody in the timber chain. From the people that are cutting, buying, harvesting, the landowners getting less for the timber. The whole industry is in a very unhealthy position right now, from the person who owns the actual tree to the person who cuts the tree to the person who carries it to the mills. And the European Union deforestation regulation is making things worse. Now, what they should have done with the European Union is to exempt the United States of America. Or they could have created a zero risk category, and the U.S. is zero risk for deforestation, and put us in that. And instead, they've chosen to apply a standard to us very similar to what are the same as what they're putting on Brazil, where they do have an issue of deforestation. Now, here's a caveat that a lot of American producers don't know. The European Union is actually exempting some of the European Union from the same rules and regulations that they're putting on the United States of America. So it's creating an unfair trade barrier for America's producers. And we're not going to accept it.
And Congressman, as we wrap up here, Chairman Thompson's tenure, according to House rules, as the top Republican on the House Ag Committee, is nearing a close at the end of this Congress. And as there's been speculation about who might fill that top Republican role on the House Ag Committee, your name has floated around for that role. So curious to know first if you would be willing to step into that top Republican role on the House Ag Committee, and you know what your priorities would be if selected by your colleagues.
GT is a wonderful man. He's been an exceptionally good chair. We have gotten the Farm Bill through the House of Representatives this year. We got H.R. 1 done, which had the reference price increases and the other things that had to be done for production agriculture, or we probably wouldn't have gotten the Farm Bill across the floor. So again, GT, wonderful friend, wonderful man, has done a good job as chair. I'm absolutely seeking the chair of the House Ag Committee. What I will tell you is I look forward with working hand in hand with Brooke Rollins and our producers to make sure that we are doing what is right for American production agriculture. And when I say when we're doing what is right, I mean everything from working with the land grant institutions on development of seed and chemical technology and making sure that technology is available to our producers at a fair price is one of the things that we're going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at the consolidation of that very same today's technology, if you will, and the accumulation through Chem China and other organizations that don't share the interests or the values of the American producer. So we're going to be very aggressive with those things, and we're going to make sure that we keep American production agriculture together. We've stayed together in the past. That is key to getting the Farm Bill done. And there are going to be times when what we do for is a little better for one commodity than the other one. But you know, the way you address that is not by not doing anything. The way you address that is when you come back the next time, you make sure that you keep in mind what happened on the last one. And we just have to keep pushing forward. We've been backing up for a while now with regard to the profitability in agriculture. And so we're very much going to be focused on working with land grant institutions, including the economist, in finding ways to get the American producer more for what the American consumer actually pays at the grocery store. Remember, we were under 10% just a couple of years ago of what the American consumer paid at the grocery store going to the American farmer. We're probably closer to 5% today. We have to get what is going to the producer. We have to get those percentages up.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Andrew Hickey looks at rising diesel prices in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Fuel prices continue to climb due to the war with Iran. This chart shows the average cost of a gallon of diesel fuel in the U.S. The Energy Information Administration says diesel fuel is currently averaging $5.64 per gallon, which is up by nearly $2 per gallon since the start of the war, when prices were only $3.89. Regular gas prices currently sit at $4.50 per gallon. The restrictions on ship traffic through the Strait of Hormuz have driven oil prices up, and gas prices are climbing in response. As gas prices rise, Washington's attention on biofuels has intensified, putting year-round E15 legislation firmly in the spotlight and making it a key factor in Farm Bill negotiations. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world.
Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
Welcome back. We're joined by Callie Eideberg with the Vogel Group and Robbie Minich with the National Cotton Council on our panel this week. To begin, Callie, the Farm Bill passed in the House and now heads to the Senate. Where do you see the fights playing out in the upper chamber?
Well, the Senate has been teed up and ready to go for quite a while, but I think we've got one really big sticking point that they need to resolve before they can move forward, and that is a big fight on the SNAP program. Fights in the SNAP program are nothing new. We have seen Farm Bill after Farm Bill fall apart and then get put back together based around parameters in the SNAP program, and playing out again this year. Last summer, the One Big Beautiful Bill pulled out a tremendous amount of money out of the SNAP program and moved those administrative costs over into the states. And there is a lot of desire from senators right now, especially senators on the Democratic side of the aisle, to pull back those administrative cuts, or at least delay them for a couple of years. So the fight right now going on behind the scenes is how they potentially pay for that delay so that everyone can get to a better place on the SNAP program.
Yeah, and Cal, I think this is an interesting issue because we've seen, you know, Senator Klobuchar say this is the first thing that I want to change, and Chairman Bozeman saying, you know, this is absolutely a no. So, I mean, how does this play out? Where do they, obviously they'll need Democrats across the aisle to hit that 60 vote threshold, but how does this play out?
Well, they do need Democrats to cross the aisle. And if this is the Democrats' line in the sand, then I think there's going to be some creative negotiation going on behind the scenes. I'm hearing that if the Senate can find roughly $17 billion, they can potentially move this forward and come to agreement, at least delaying the SNAP cuts and the administration funding switches that are going to move to the states. So that is a potential area of compromise. We could see that move forward. We could see Democrats come back to the table to vote for a farm bill if this delay is paid for and can move forward. And then I think Democrats are looking at, you know, what they could do long term if they could get this delay over the next 2 years.
And Robbie, we'll bring you to the conversation. I mean, we look ahead to Farm Bill negotiations in the Senate. I mean, what's at stake for cotton growers? What are you watching?
Well, I mean, obviously, we're very supportive of the House Farm Bill that got passed out through the House. Look forward to working with the Senate as they start to put their bill together. Senator Bozeman, I think, is very committed to trying to get a bipartisan bill through the committee and across the finish line in the Senate. And look, I mean, you know, whenever you look at, there were a lot of great things in the One Big Beautiful Bill for commodity programs, but there's the rest of the Farm Bill, and there's a lot of important items that need to be taken care of and need to be addressed.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. Pesticide provisions were stripped from the Farm Bill in the House and remain a contentious issue as the bill moves to the Senate. I asked Robbie Minich with the National Cotton Council how that issue, which is very important to row crop growers, could fare in the upper chamber.
No, I think it's certainly a possibility. I mean, like with anything in the Senate, as you were discussing, you got to figure out how you get the 60 and can you get the votes there? I think Leader Thune made some comments earlier this week about the importance of that particular provision. It was something that was very important to us and to our farmers. I mean, at the end of the day, farmers want to grow a safe commodity, not only to be safe for themselves, but to be safe for the consumer. And that's what they do.
Yeah. And fertilizer is just one sector of the farm economy that's really hurting farmers right now. But more broadly, I mean, the farm economy is struggling and lawmakers have toyed around with doing additional farm aid before those enhancements to the farm safety net go into effect this fall. But there's still a lot of questions on that front. But I'll tee you up very open-ended. But, you know, do you see lawmaker appetite and, you know, even a vehicle to move forward on additional farm aid later this Congress?
I think there's a lot of appetite and interest from traditional farm state members who serve on the House and Senate Agriculture Committee. Unfortunately, that is not enough votes to get it over the finish line. And so the most likely option is to move this type of supplemental as part, or this type of funding for farmers through what we call a disaster supplemental. Disaster supplemental is something that doesn't need to be paid for. And so you don't need to find those offsets, which is very helpful in getting bills across the finish line and getting funding out the door. The challenge is, are we going to have enough members in the House and in the Senate who will vote for this? And I think that is really dependent on whether or not we have, frankly, other disaster needs across the country outside of agriculture.
Yeah. And Robbie, the cotton sector is also included in, you know, part of the farm economy that's struggling. But one point of optimism may be the Buy American Cotton Act. So can you tell us, you know, where that's at right now and, you know, what impact that would have on the cotton industry if it's passed?
You know, right now there's a House bill and a Senate bill. The Senate bill was introduced by Senator Hyde Smith. It's got about 15 co-sponsors on it. Bipartisan Senator Warnock from Georgia was just added in the House. Greg Murphy and Terry Sewell introduced the bill there earlier this year, up to, I think, 72 co-sponsors on the House side. Again, very bipartisan. And the kind of the neat thing about this bill is that there's really something for everyone there. When you look at if you take the House, for example, when you look at the co-sponsors there, there are urban members, there are rural members, there are members that are just on complete opposite sides of the ideological spectrum. But they see different things in the bill that's important to them. You know, for growers, it's certainly going to raise the price of cotton. For members who care about manufacturing, it's going to spur domestic manufacturing and more, not only that, but manufacturing in this hemisphere. And then finally, from an environmental standpoint, whenever you think about the microplastics and the microfibers that are being shedded from synthetic clothing, that's very has a big impact on the environment, has an impact on human health. You know, no matter where you're at as a member, the Buying American Cotton Act has something there that I think will be important.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Andrew Honecke looks at Farmer Bridge Assistance Program payments and this week's Map It Out.
The Farmer Bridge Assistance Program set aside $11 billion for row crop producers and $1 billion for specialty crop and sugar producers to help with losses before farm program provisions in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act go into effect later this year. This map shows the amount of money each state has received through the program, according to USDA. Nearly $9.6 billion of the $12 billion has been distributed so far, with eight states receiving more than $400 million each. According to the American Farm Bureau Federation, corn and soybean acres account for 42% of payments, with wheat, cotton, and rice rounding out the top five. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honecke.
Register now for the 2026 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. The summit takes place June 2nd in Sacramento. See the latest information and register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south and it blew that way and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. And I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate will be in session next week, and USDA's Crop Progress Report will be released Monday. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.